This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and Animal Health and Health News channels. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience simply at eHealth Radio. Today, once again, we are speaking with Dr. Karen Davis, PhD, founder and president of United Poultry Concerns, a nonprofit organization that promotes the compassionate and respectful treatment of domestic fowl, including a sanctuary for chickens in the state of Virginia. Dr. Davis, welcome back to eHealth Radio.
Thank you, Eric, very much. I'm delighted to be back on your show today.
And it's always a pleasure to have you as well. So, Dr. Davis, you just were a panelist in New York talking about where did our compassion go, children, adults, and the loss of the human-animal bond. And you wrote a book review on a similar subject, the emotional lives of animals and children. Obviously, this is a very important subject. Can you tell us more about this briefly?
Yes, I can. Yes, I was a panelist at the City College of New York on December 2nd, where we discussed the whole question of what happens between childhood and adulthood to seemingly sever the bond that exists in children to other animals. It appears that young children are very drawn to not only dogs and cats, but when they visit a farmed animal sanctuary, to chickens and turkeys and goats and ducks and cows and pigs. And yet, as people grow up, they seem to lose that connection. So at the panel discussed what the causes of this loss of connection may be, not in everyone, but in perhaps most adults, and what we can do about it, and what a farmed animal sanctuary can teach us about this important bond of kinship between humans and other animals. And this is an issue that I also discuss in my review of Dr. William Crane's new book. He's a psychologist at City College of New York, titled The Emotional Lives of Animals and Children.
What happens between childhood and adulthood that causes most children to outgrow their primal delight in and empathy with animals and become detached, callous, and indifferent toward them in many regards?
Well, Eric, that is the big question, and I don't have the big answer. I think that several things happen. First of all, we hear the term socialization used to explain what happens between early childhood and the teenage years, and finally adulthood. But that term is a mere characterization. It is not an explanation. So what happens? It is quite possible that human beings in the past, having experienced, at least with some animals, some genuine competition and danger and so forth, developed attitudes of hostility toward at least some kinds of animals, and a sense that they were a threat, and that the only response to these animals could be human aggression. That kind of experience could possibly be encoded in our genetic nature to the extent that it has an effect even though we're not under those types of threats, certainly with all animals. I also think that as people develop, they develop interests that overwhelm or may be in conflict with their early love for animals. Teenagers become interested in dating, and they become interested in the opposite sex. They become interested in how they look and making a good impression on their peers. And then there's this huge effort to get people to be ready for adulthood and adult responsibilities. So we see that people's interests shift as they get older, which is probably a biological event that happens with people. And we also see, as the poet William Wordsworth described in one of his great poems, Ode on Intimations of Immortality, Recollections from Early Childhood, that children, although he says children have an innate, visionary, empathic relationship to the natural world. Children also are motivated magnetically to want to imitate and please the adults in their lives, their parents, other relatives, and so forth. So they tend to perhaps be also very afraid of being ridiculed by the adults in their lives. And we know, for example, that as 4-H is an exemplification of, children are encouraged by adults to raise an animal, a calf, for example, and to tend and love that animal and give the animal a name. And the child, unaware of the destination and purpose of all of this, does develop that loving care and responsible relationship with the calf or whatever animal may be being raised. And then suddenly it is made clear to this child that the calf is now going to be loaded onto a trailer and sent to a slaughter plant. And so many children are deeply traumatized by this experience. But then they quickly get handed a check, in one case for $1,000, this was described by somebody, and suddenly the child is almost, or many children are sort of happy that, well, now they have this money and how can I spend it and so on. So there's a kind of complicity, you might almost say, between the nature of the child and the nature of the adults who are seeking to program and socializing them into accepting a distance from animals and even an abuse for animals as a necessary thing that has to be done.
Really interesting thoughts here today. We are with Dr. Karen Davis, PhD, founder of United Poultry Concerns, the world's foremost nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the respectful treatment of domestic fowl, here on eHealth Radio's Animal Health and Health News channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Davis, you regard farmed animal sanctuaries as vitally important for the animals, the caregivers, and the public who otherwise have little or no way of meeting and learning about chickens, turkeys, cows, pigs, goats, and other animals. Can you explain your thoughts about this?
Yes, absolutely, Eric. Well, most people live in our society in urban and suburban areas. So they are no longer on the farm, which means that they have virtually no contact with farmed animals. So if they are on the farm, then the animals, however much they may be appreciated to an extent, are still considered to be destined to become food, a food source, meat, milk, and eggs. So there is always that disconnection between the life of the animal and the desire of an animal to live and not be slaughtered, and the facts of being designated as a farmed animal. And petting zoos also might include some farmed animals, but usually the whole zoo experience is vastly different from the kind of experience that visitors are going to have at a true farmed animal sanctuary, where the animals do not exist for exploitation. They are not going to be killed. They are not exhibits as if they were museum specimens, but they are there because they were rescued. And of course, for the animals themselves, every animal who is rescued, that means everything to that animal. That animal, that chicken or turkey or duck or pig or cow or goat, is alive instead of dead. Moreover, alive in a situation that allows them to have space, to have friends, to be able to eat and drink and experience fresh air without fear, as they would know and had known in the circumstances from which they were rescued. So we think it's very important for these sanctuary islands, as it were, to exist for the sake of the animals themselves and for the sake of visitors to come to the sanctuary, if they can, and get to meet the animals and hear their stories, and also to see these animals in a situation where they are truly loved and respected by their caregivers. So farmed animal sanctuaries are very important. We would like to see the day when the sanctuary is no longer an isolated island in the midst of a vast situation where billions and billions of animals are living in horrible conditions from which just a tiny thimbleful happened to have the good fortune to be rescued. We also think, I think, that if people cannot visit a farmed animal sanctuary, fortunately today, in addition to the writing that I have done about specific animals who have come to our sanctuary in Virginia, people now, that is sanctuary directors such as myself and others, now have the internet, and we can upload videos of our animals, and we can have people come to us, as it were, vicariously, even if they can't literally visit the location, and they can meet these animals, they can hear their stories on the internet, they can interact in a way that for many people brings back those early childhood loves for animals, and to kind of get back in touch with the feelings that they originally had that were lost along the way. Now, of course, many people didn't grow up around farmed animals, but again, that primal sympathy that William Wordsworth, the poet, said all people have, even if it's smothered or otherwise repressed, that it's there. And now with the internet, millions and millions of people throughout the world have an opportunity to get to know these animals in their farmed animal sanctuary setting and to connect or reconnect with them and to learn to care about them, and we would hope also to change their behavior toward them if they're exploiting them to no longer want to do that, because now they've gotten to look an animal's eyes, at an animal's eyes directly, to learn their story and to bond with them and to feel for them and with them.
Lastly, your review of William Crane's book, The Emotional Lives of Animal and Children, includes the thoughts of educator, psychoanalyst, and ethologist. Would you recommend this book for parents?
Eric, I totally recommend this book for parents and teachers and any adult, because the book is looking at, first of all, William Crane is the co-founder with his wife Ellen of Safe Haven Animal Sanctuary in upstate New York. And as Bill describes in his book, he learned through time and experiences to come to care about animals. He didn't start out that way. He's a psychologist. He worked on human issues and human problems, but he's a man with a great capacity for compassion, and as is Ellen, and she herself is a pediatrician. And so there he recounts in the book how he came to care about farmed animals, all animals, actually through an experience of bear hunting in he was not a bear hunter, but as he began to learn about what bear hunting entailed in New Jersey, that was where he took his first public stand against an animal abuse activity. And he just went from there to learn more about and learn to care about farmed animals, and he met some farmed animals, and eventually 8 years ago started Safe Haven. And Safe Haven is very much a basis of the experiences that he relates in his new book. And he talks about the animals, he evokes their lives, so that you actually get to meet Katie the hen, and you meet the goats, you meet the roosters, and you hear their stories. It's a very empathically told story. And in addition, as you mentioned, Bill Crane includes the views of and the experiences of psychoanalysts and ethologists and educators about what they have learned about how empathy and children and empathy for other human beings, how these are related. And how children who learn to be altruistic towards animals are eager to be altruistic towards other people in their lives. So really, again, there is this matrix of compassion and empathy that can be so beneficial to everybody, to other animals, to other members of our species of all ages, And we can have richer, more complete lives as a result. And all of this information is included in Bill Crane's book, The Emotional Lives of Animals and Children, which was just published this year, just came out a month or so ago. And it's a very readable book. It is not a complex, weighty, academic type of book, not at all. It is not all that long. It is relatively short, and it is readable for anybody who is interested in the subject, any adult, and any young adult for that matter. So in answer to your question, I highly recommend this book to parents as well as to all people who are, in the broadest sense of the word, educators.
Well, Dr. Davis, certainly good to have you, and certainly to draw our attention to the respect and treatment of domestic fowl and animals. If you would, tell us where folks can get more information about United Poultry Concerns and how they can be in touch as well.
Yes, Eric, thank you. Our website, United Poultry Concerns website, we promote the compassionate and respectful treatment of chickens, turkeys, ducks, and other domestic fowl, and by extension, all animals, but our mission focuses on those birds. Our website address is www.upc-online.org. Again, a dash or a hyphen, not an underline. So it's upc-online.org. And people will see a wealth of information there, including, if they scroll down on the left side of the homepage, Humane Education, which they can click on, and they will see our resources, including the books that we make available for children and just the whole panoply of materials that we make available for people of all ages. Again, it's www.upc-online.org, and people will also so see on our homepage on the left side how they can click on our Facebook page and they can get involved. We certainly look forward to people wanting to become members and supporting members and support us in any way they can financially, by writing letters, by ordering our, just really signing up for our news alerts on the internet. And we also publish a quarterly magazine called Poultry Press, available online as well as in print. So that's how people can reach us. My email address is Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at upc-online.org.
Very good. Dr. Davis, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us here today on eHealth Radio, and happy holidays to you and yours.
Eric, thank you so much, and I wish you the very happiest holiday ever. Thank you very much.
Certainly appreciate it. We've been speaking with Dr. Karen Davis, PhD, founder of United Poultry Concerns, the world's foremost nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the respectful treatment of domestic fowl. And once again, the website of reference is upc-online.org. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Animal Health and Health News channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.